And welcome everyone to today's News Tonight, the weeknight news show where we're joined by special guests and our lovely patrons to discuss the day's gaming news. I'm your host, Derek Bittner, and I'm joined as always by my good friends and GVG co-founders, Steve Bowling and Ash Polson, along with some guy you might have heard of just here or there, Greg Miller of Kinda Funny Games, here for our 100th episode. I don't know how we did it, but we did it, so welcome, Greg. Glad you could make it.
Hello and congratulations, gentlemen. 100 episodes, nothing to sneeze at. Congratulations on doing this and launching it and having a hell of a year.
Thank you so much. It's incredible how serendipitous this turned out to be, because it wasn't always the fact that you were going to be on episode 100, but it just happened to be to work out that way, and it's perfect.
I was like, wait, which one will give me the biggest pop? Put me on that episode.
Yeah.
Put me on the one that'll be. What's the important one coming up? Put me on that one.
Yeah.
That'll do. Absolutely.
I know.
Hell,
right?
Yeah. Yes.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. That was a crazy number. You know, we were lucky enough now to be in coming up in January in our seventh year. I guess 6.5 right now. Kinda Funny overall. But then, yeah, to have it pop up on the calendar that it was Kinda Funny Games. Yeah. We talked about it in the weekly meeting. Like, but wait, what year is it? And somebody's like, oh, it's got to be 3. And I was like, it's 4. And Nick just goes, God, we're old. Like, we've been doing this for so long, right?
Right. Steve, sir, I believe you are still muted. Unfortunately.
And,
yes.
And Amy tells me that the chat is not scrolling, so you might want to hit that as well. Steve was
OBS.
So
starstruck. You're gonna try to blame OBS for this, Steve, a program that you turn on and nothing changes. Update to update, day to day for no reason.
Never. Never ever.
Oh goodness. He's just so awestruck.
He says, yes,
my gotta man. Love
Steve's
that.
Steve's mic OBS. Is just gone from OBS, for those who still can't hear him.
Love it.
Apparently, Ash is also strong with the decibels. I don't know what it is, Ash. You go live and...
It's so weird. My audio levels change from day to day. It's so weird, even though I don't change anything on my end. So I will lower myself a little bit.
I've done the proverbial software equivalent of kicking OBS as hard as I could, and I think folks can hear me now. Hopefully.
Do the old Fonzie bang and like A.
And this is when we first started GVG, my computer did this weird thing where for you guys, you would all see the show just fine, but on my monitor, everything would freeze, and I would literally just have to bang the side of the computer. And then it'd just start moving again. And I'm a computer guy, so that should tell you
gotta
something.
Gotta love that. Yeah.
Have you done anything with patron chat yet, Steve? Because I know that's still not scrolling.
Let me take a look here. Interact.
We'll get all these ironed out in the meantime.
There we go.
But
we're all good. People can see it. It's
okay. Nice.
All right. Sorry about that. But...
In the meantime, I did want to ask Greg, how was covering E3? Since it was such a different show this year.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, you know what I mean? That first day when we got there for rehearsals, me and Jackie were on set and we just kept saying, we can't believe we're on set. I can't believe I'm in another place with people, right? We're all so used to, at this point, recording into our webcams, only talking this way, to actually be right there and have microphones and IBF, IBF and talking to people. It was just... It was ridiculous. It was such a change of pace. But then overall, I thought, the show was, for me, awesome in terms of a coverage thing. It was awesome to work with Damon Hatfield again from IGN. Awesome to work with Michael from GameSpot. Meet Avali, meet Dan. And then, yeah, like to what you're saying, it is so different. Like, I like the idea of the ESA really saying, hey, we don't know. We haven't in the past known really what we're doing, but we're grabbing the wheel and trying to make this into something. And I think it's hit or miss, the four, do we need 4 days of E3? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. And you figure the ESA has so many partnerships and different people that when somebody says, yeah, we'd love a slot, they're not really, it's not like how when we run Kinda Funny Game Showcase, I go through and vet all the games and vet all the things and give you that sign off, right? Like, I feel like their partners are like, we want one. Like, okay, cool. And then you get the presentation, you watch, like, okay, yeah, this doesn't really match up to the Xbox thing we're doing, but like, why we're gonna help you out and do this thing, right?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I was looking. It was a very different year for E3. One, I was super hyped to see you on the streams. My wife, I met her after my run on Kinda Funny, but she watched my episode when she found out that I was a YouTuber and did games, and she's like, "Were you on that guy's show?" And she, I was like, yeah, yeah, it was once upon a time when I didn't have facial hair.
She's like, dang, that's not happening again. He's too big for you now.
Yeah. She's like, he's too famous now. Can't.
Yeah. No, yeah, it was awesome. It was a really cool thing to host and really cool thing for them to try. And I thought the content we did was great. And again, like, I, you know, applaud the ESA for bringing us in and not having us fenced in. You know what I mean? It was brought in to do what we do best, and that was to talk about this and react about this and hang out and not be, you know, just marketing pieces. Like, obviously I knew that ahead of time, that's why I took the job, but it wasn't, you know, hanging in and be like, man, just talk only about what you loved at Gearbox. Like, oh man, you know what I mean? Like, we're allowed to be like, that was an interesting mix, and why didn't they show this, and why did they do that, let alone to have the media partners there to really be the people who get to flesh it out and have, you know, the full-blown, all right, you know, Damon, Dan, Nerdist, what do you think?
Right.
Yeah, it was a really cool panel of hosts that they had set up, and I was impressed for it being, you know, a remote E3. I went in not sure what to expect, not sure if I would like the show or not. But ultimately, And I told the guys this throughout our E3 coverage, it's a testament to how well put together it was that it didn't feel all that different from being there, other than, you know,
right,
not seeing all your friends, which is the best thing about E3. But other content-wise, totally, it felt very similar.
And that's the thing about it, right? Where it's, you figure, you know, we ended on Tuesday, just like you normally would. Usually, right, Nintendo ends it, and it's like, guess what? The show floor is open. Everybody run out there. Let's all go. You know, okay, cool. Like, that's how it usually works. And so, like, this year to have it end, and there'd be none of that. You know, we were lucky to have Jeff in the Summer Games Fest have the demos all set up. You know, there was a whole bunch of different people running Steam wishlist stuff that you get into. But, yeah, not the same as, all right, cool, you've seen all these cool games, now go play them and then podcast and do interviews and talk about it that way.
Get those cameras out, film off-camera stuff.
Totally. Run back to your crappy hotel Wi-Fi, try to upload it all. All
right, what'd you think?
It was still strangely draining, though, from even from the comfort of our own home, and without our feet killing us day after day. Even without that aspect, we did, like, what, 10 to 12 reaction streams over the course of E3, and it was still quite draining. Of course, certainly for you, Greg, hosting every day and doing what you did. But
That was the thing for me, is that I ESA, when they asked me, I was like, sure, but I'm like, I still want to react with Kind of Funny, and they're like, oh yeah, we'll give you setup. So like, when it would be, all right, cool, let's see what Xbox has, they'd be like, all right, you're clear, and then I would run up this staircase to sit at my laptop on Discord and then talk to my guys about it, and run downstairs and introduce the thing or whatever.
Oh, that's awesome.
Man, so this E3 didn't really change for you at all.
For me, it was still, yeah, it was definitely, it was maybe even more exhausting of coming, you know, we'd get back to the hotel, I would have dinner, and then we would put on Ozark, and I was usually asleep by 9:30.
Wait.
To wake up for the 5:30 call time.
Off topic, but is the new season of Ozark out?
No, I never watched it.
I'm
watching Ozark for the first time. We're about to end season two. We're having a great time. What a show.
God damn, it's so good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever even heard of it, but I'm behind on a lot.
Oh, you got to get it. So. Netflix.
Yep. Jason Bateman in the drug trade. That's all you really need to know.
Well, there you go.
By the way, congrats to Hunter J in our live audience patron chat. Their PS5 just came in today. They're looking for game recommendations, and all of our patrons already gave you a bunch. But yeah, I think we would echo Ratchet and Sackboy. And
Returnal.
Yeah. Returnal. Returnal. Yep. Spider-Man Miles Morales. Things. Yeah. So there's, and of course, FF7 Remake Intergrade. There's so much that you are going to have a lot of fun consuming.
I actually just finally started playing Intergrade last night.
Nice.
The intermission part. The funny thing is, I only played 2 hours. Half of it was Fort Condor. It's just like, oh, well, I don't know where I'm going, so I might as well crank this out all right now. And it's just nothing but Fort Condor. And it's fun. Better than the original Fort Condor, I'll say that much.
Way better than the original Fort Condor, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that what it's like to play League of Legends? Because it feels like that's what it's like to play League of Legends, just because you have the different paths and stuff like that.
You know, I don't know. In your head, just let that be League of Legends. That's all you need to know.
Yeah. I agree with that, yeah. Well.
Oh, goodness. But, yeah, I believe we should, even before anything else, because we got a bunch of Super Chats in here, I do want to read those, but we also have our always wonderful Monday sponsor, the Game Orb. And the Game Orb is a fledgling channel that has focused mostly on Nintendo content until now. While they are still running Let's Plays of Nintendo games like Splatoon 2 and Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, going forward, they're also covering games on the Xbox Series X like Portal Still Alive as part of a fresh daily upload schedule. So be sure to subscribe to the Game Warp at the link in the description. And we have them above 300. Let's get them to 350. We're working towards that next goal and continue to show them the GV Gang's support. And as always, they want to promote their friend's YouTube channel, Galactic Reaper, which we have a link to in the description. It looks like Ash just posted it in the chat.
Yes.
All around, all over the place. Definitely want to check out the Game Orb and just continue showing them the amazing support that you have up to this point. And just thank you to them for all the support they've shown us up until this point, because it is massive.
Especially given that we're at episode 100 and the Game Orb has been sponsoring us for many of those 100 episodes. Oh, wow. So seriously, the Game Orb, thank you so much for your continued support. You are... We love you, and we just, we want to get you to as many subs as possible. So thank you, and let's get you to 350, 400 and beyond. Let's have you take over the world, you and Galactic Reaper.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You got Galactic Reaper in there. Take over the universe. That's, you know, small. You got, that's how it all goes.
So just a small
ask. There you go. Before we get to the news stories, as I was saying before, though, we do have a couple of super chats that I want to read before we get to that. And first up is Jarrett Gardner with a $9.99 donation saying, after hours of frustration day, I was able to pre-order my Shin Megami Tensei 5 Special Edition. Hope everyone who wanted it got it. Also, this is the best community on YouTube, and you guys are the best. Well, that's very kind of you, and Thank you. Congratulations on getting that special edition, because apparently any type of special edition or cool thing that's coming out, good luck fighting the scalpers. That's about where it's
everywhere. They're everywhere now.
They just like, oh cool, people want this special edition thing, we're gonna grab it. It's just, it's, this has to be worse than the is this worse than the speculator boom for the 90s for comics? Because it feels like I've seen a lot of comparisons, and it seems to be affecting way more industries than just comics this time around.
It really the whole scalping situation has gotten really truly terrible, and it seems like in everything.
I didn't know about the 90s in comics. I was a kid, so
the difference was, I think it's so hard to tell now because everybody has Twitter and you can eat, you know. I mean, you're seeing everything and everybody complains, so it's like, I don't know, is it worse? It feels like it's worse because everybody can, you know, immediately be like, I can't find anything I want. But we're also, as you know, we're talking about in the Patreon chat, right? Like, we're living through the fact you still can't get a PlayStation 5, you still can't get a Series X, which is so core to what we all care about.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And I mean, I guess it can't be, we'll have to see the after effects, because it almost literally killed Marvel, which is a weird concept to think about, but there you go. Either way, Shellshock Prime with a $5 donation saying, funny story, I was the Mario cosplayer at PAX East 2018, and I asked Greg if he worked on Giant Bomb or if he was a fan. He said, just a fan.
I love it.
It's true.
I love how we all have these sort of Greg Miller interaction stories.
Yeah.
People just shouting at me as I run past them at a PAX.
Exactly. Jaden Buck with a $2 donation says, Loud Vibes Gaming. Hopefully, well, Loud Vibes Gaming for Ash, Quiet Vibes Gaming for Steve.
Yeah, so we gotta, I love my audio, nice, everybody, so I think we should be okay now. Well,
that was
a
while ago. I think you're all
not you're me anymore.
Cool. Joe N with a 10 euro, 99
pence.
Euro?
Pence, I think.
Oh, it's not euros, but I don't know. But
no, that's euros for sure. I don't know what the
1099 euro.
The euro are.
I don't either. Sorry, dumb American. But says, congrats, guys. Been watching you since the Wii U days on GX. You are the heart and soul of GX. So I was so happy when I saw you started GVG. I do miss Tom, though. Well, Tom's great. There's no doubt.
Yeah, thank you very much. We miss Tom, too. Yeah. We love Tom. Yeah. And he's forever one of my best friends. I love that guy. And thank you so much for the kind words, man, and for the donation. Thank you so much, Joe.
For those of you wondering, for those of you that are fans of Tom, just a quick plug for him and what he's doing. He recently released a demo as part of the whole Steam Next thing for his game Carpoon. So if you want to
Finally Carpoon released that. That's Steam, awesome.
There's a free demo out. Go check it out. He's been working on that game for as long as I've known him.
A long time.
Yeah,
insane, it's been a while. Much, yeah. It's a fun game too, so check it out.
Nice. Sketch at NPM with a $4.99 donation says, binging kind of funny, and I'm so aligned with Greg's outrage that they tried to rank X-Men 3 over X-Men 2, or when they made him watch Catwoman. Love you guys.
Thank you.
Who the heck was trying to put X-Men 3 over X-Men 2?
Yeah.
We did a show called In Review where we watch a series of movies and then rank and review them, right? And this and the Raimi Spider-Mans made me feel like a crazy person. Where there was like, Raimi Spider-Mans, bad all the way through. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, no. Like, one, like, they're not like modern superhero movies, but you're crazy. And then, like, This one here where they were like, yeah, trying to tell me X3 was better than X2. I was like, you are a crazy person. What are you talking about? Yeah, it was Tim. It was a couple other ones. It wasn't just like one odd man out. It was everybody trying to tell me I was crazy.
What? I mean, look, I don't even hate The Last Stand as much as some other people, but it's better than X2, what are you talking about? X2 is clearly the superior movie.
The only good thing they had in there was the casting of Kelsey Grammer. That's about it.
Yeah, right. I am offended by that idea. That
there's a lot of offensive things on In Review, I assure you.
Nice.
Whew. All right, then. That's...
Yeah, that's a take. Okay. That is a take. Yeah.
It's hot.
Itzimo with a $4.99 donation says, "Happy Father's Day, fellas, including you, Ash. I know you're a fur daddy. We're a fur daddy.
Oh, I was and I will be soon again. So thank you very much. Yes.
Nice. Yep.
Yes. And then finally, 112 with a 112 donation, $1.12. No comment there. Hey, thanks. It's just 112 donation for the win. So there you go.
Thank you so much.
All right. So shall we actually get to the news? And let's start off with just probably the most out of nowhere piece of news, the most latest piece of news that came out today. So the Paris-based Cyber Group Studios has inked a co-development and co-production deal with Square Enix for a Final Fantasy IX animated series. What? Like,
out of nowhere.
The exact Final Fantasy you'd expect. This is the one people have been clamoring for.
Right.
I mean, it's a fan favorite. It works as an animated series, but does it work for an animated series aimed at 8 to 13-year-olds?
That's the part that kind of quells my hype a little bit here, because I love FF9, and then when I saw this, I was like, oh, the aesthetic lends itself perfectly to an animated series. The setting is great, but it does get pretty dark toward the end, FF9. And 8 to 13-year-olds, I feel like they might have to, I don't know, lighten up a little bit, which is fine in its own way, but I was kind of looking forward to an adaptation, I guess.
As Master Thief points out, especially since, you know, 9 has Vivi's existential story literally contemplating his own mortality, that's...
Yeah.
For the kids.
Right.
So the thing I find interesting about this now, it's a weird way to announce a show. I mean, Square Enix seems to just not be talking about it.
When's the last time Square did anything normally? Well, this is more than the weird way not to show. You're Square Enix.
That's true. I was talking to our mutual friend Imran about this today, and it was like, how did they seed this announcement to people? Like, you know, all of us here on this call, like, we all get PR emails like at a rate of hundreds a day, and I didn't see anything about this until it popped up in our news doc today. And it's like, I guess some animation related blogs have this information, but they're all contradictory about whether it's a leak or it's an official press release. they all seem to have different verbiage on how this got announced. I agree, it's you know, it almost lends it more credence because of how weirdly it's been announced. But I don't know. FF9. I'm a casual Final Fantasy fan. I play the ones where anime dudes have giant swords, and that's about it. Sure. But I look at FF9 and I'm like, I don't know. I mean, this is not the one I signed up for. But I get that it has its fans, lots of them that aren't me, and I'm happy for those folks that this will be an animated series. But it just seems like such an oddball pick.
I don't think I realized you weren't an FF9 fan, Steve.
I'm a big character design person. I have to really like the look of the person I'm inhabiting. In my
oh, that's the one. That'll do it. That's what gets you.
Yeah. Fair
enough. And
I mean, that's up
here. Yeah,
that's why a lot of people have trouble getting into One Piece, so there you go.
Right. You, Narukami, in our live audience chat, choosing potential violence, asking all of us and Greg, if you are an FF fan, Greg, what's your favorite mainline Final Fantasy game?
Oh, boy.
See, I'm not a Final Fantasy fan, and I've tried many times, but what I would do is Final Fantasy VII Remake, I adored. Like, I couldn't believe it.
When I
texted Tim that when we were reviewing it, I was like, dude, like, I'm all in. Because I had tried so many times to play Final Fantasy VII, you know, through on PS1, in emulators, you know, the versions they'd put out. Obviously, I had tried stuff like 15. I had tried the Lightning series. I tried them all the time, hoping it would be the one to grab me. And I never had any success. I still need to... Well, I did demos a long time ago with Destin on IGN when they did Realm Reborn, and I enjoyed what I played but never went back to it. I have been since coerced in the past month to download it and give it a real shot, but I haven't got time yet to do it. But yeah, for me, it would be Remake.
Nice.
That makes sense. It's my game of the year last year, so it makes sense to me.
I would probably have to go with 10. I like my top three kind of like cycle between 6, 9, and 10, but I think if I had to focus on one, it would be 10 is my favorite. But I'm a big Final Fantasy fan in general, so I say 10, but I love a lot of them. Yeah.
It's hard to choose, but of the ones I played, I would have to go with 9, so if this one doesn't work, it's going to cut me. It's too rough.
What about you, Steve?
I'm kind of with Greg on this one. 7 remains my favorite out of everything I've played, and I mean, 7 Remake for me, and I talked a lot about this last year when it came out on PS4, but it is everything I wanted from like a modern reimagining of Final Fantasy 7. And I love the fact, you know, I know a lot of people are really upset about the way the story went in that game, and I won't break it fully down here, but I mean, as a game that is, what, at this, God, an unimaginable amount of years old, because I just don't want to think about it in relation to my own mortality. But I like that this game can give me kind of that nostalgia hit that I love from it, but also the story is keeping me guessing at this point. Like, I'm ready for episode 2 of this. And I feel like it reinvents the game in a lot of ways that keep it fresh. So I would say if I had to have an alternative media version of a Final Fantasy game, I would definitely want to see another take on 7, just as like, I don't know that I'd want to see it as a series aimed at young teens, but you know, I want a gritty ass, like dark Final Fantasy 7 game where it really gets into just how messed up Midgar is and all of the convoluted crap.
Kind of got that better with the remake, but yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Azran killing it in a live audience chat saying, in a callback to the EP stream, did y'all hear about the last person to discover the good of the series? They were the final fan to see it.
Oh,
Azran. My proverbial hat is off to you, sir. Good. That is fantastic. Nice.
Woof.
Wow. I love it.
Yeah, we'll have to see if Square Enix actually says anything about this whole Final Fantasy IX series. Again, it seems to all stem from this Kids Screen article, and nobody really knows how to take it, but we'll see what happens. And what an odd choice. Like, do you just call it Final Fantasy IX and confuse people, or just Final Fantasy...
Colon, the one with the weird-looking cat person, which is also like half of all of Final Fantasy.
Rolls right off the tongue.
Yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. There you go.
Yeah.
You just described Final Fantasy, a lot of Final Fantasy 14 players.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, boy. Well, let's go ahead and move on to the next story, which is a nice, good bit of, let's go trolling here.
I hope it's not just trolling.
It's got to be. Konami has revealed a Silent Hill skateboard. Just as more Silent Hill merch is being teased in a new newsletter that with the words that all it says is the wait is about to end. What that means, but you get at the very least, you're getting a skateboard.
I mean, stop doing this. Stop. Why would you do this now in the middle of all this abandoned? Is it a Kojima game? Is it Silent Hills? Just stop. Everybody, if you're Kojima, if you're Silent Hill, just stop. If you're Konami, stop. Just let's get out of here. Let's just let these people make this game and see whatever the hell it's going to be and get out of here.
I just want to see Silent Hill return in some way. Not anyway, because we've seen what handing Silent Hill to the wrong studios can result in. It's like Silent Hill Downpour, Homecoming. Not so great, but God, if I could get a new core Silent Hill game that is true to the first three games in the series, I would be so hyped. But Konami, just stop dodging this question. Just say, are you doing it or are you not doing it? We don't want a skateboard, man. We want a game.
I interest you in a Silent Hill pachinko machine. Because that could easily be the next one you get too.
Yeah,
they can join Castlevania with that erotic gameplay action or whatever they said for the. Yeah, if you look up the Castlevania pachinko machine, it was like erotic action or something like that. It's weird.
Yeah, it is. I remember that.
All right. I love Stag Nasty here because Pyramid Head, more like Pyramid Shred.
Wow. I like that.
Which all I'm imagining is just Pyramid Head laying down on the ground and you just like ramp off of his face.
I didn't know.
I feel like this is just such a weird situation. Like, where Greg was talking about, it's what, Blue Studio and abandoned, and people were like, what was it? Somebody said Blue Square, right? Studio head's name.
Blue Box.
Hassan Blue Box, yes. People were saying the studio head's name, I think it's Hassan, like somehow translates to Kojima.
If you translate it in Turkish, it comes out to be Hideo or whatever.
That's what it was. It's like people are, it's enough to make the Smash community jealous. Like the way these folks are connecting these points together. But I honestly think it's all smoke. I don't think that there's, I don't think Kojima is involved with Silent Hill. I would be surprised. I mean, because folks dug into that, and what was it? Like, Blue Box Studios has years worth of failed Kickstarters that haven't come to fruition. And I mean,
the problem is that they had one Kickstarter that they stopped because they got private funding, and they say they've been funded by PlayStation since 2015. 2015, of course, when like Kojima, it's like, it's like, it gets worse. Like right as we are going live, Jason Schreier tweeted, he has an interview with the guy from Blue Box. New, all evidence suggests that Hassan, Ka Rahman, the man whose game fans suspect maybe a Hideo Kojima conspiracy, is a real life indie developer. But after an hour-long interview with him today, I left with more questions than answers. It's like, come on!
That is a heck of a tease. That's good on him for that lead.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, I feel for the Silent Hill fans. Like, I get it. Like, I'm grasping on the hope of that rating of Castlevania Advance Collection. I know, so it's just like, give me that.
I will say I'm not a Silent Hill fan. Y'all know that I don't like spooky games. I'm a complete coward. But I'm in this for the mystery at this point. I just want to see this whole thing unravel and find out what's left. Like I'm addicted to the drama surrounding this more than anything else, just because I want to know, like, is this just a really clever person at Blue Box, like, intentionally pushing fans' buttons? Or if it is Kojima, this is a long ass game he's been playing at this point.
Yeah.
I honestly think it's just that they've painted themselves into a corner where I think the initial reaction when they put up Abandoned and everybody was like, it's a Kojima game. Like the quotes everybody ran with were like, IGN and everybody else was like, it's not, and this sucks. We've been working on this for so long, and now everybody's, you know, misrepresenting our work to be this. But then I think they got over that initial reaction. We're like, wait a second, like, this is great publicity that people care about it. So then they did the whole, our game's name's going to get revealed, and it starts with an S and it ends with an L. And then that blew up, and then they saw people start to really get their hopes up, and I think now they're trying to reel it in, but I think it's just too far gone.
And I feel bad for the inevitable backlash against them, because I feel terrible, because, you know, they've obviously, whatever they are working on, they've been pouring their, you know, blood, sweat, and tears into their own project. It might still look pretty good. Oh, and it might, but that's the thing, is that it might not matter. Like, no matter how good it looks, because it probably isn't Silent Hill or anything.
But it's that whole thing, right, where I feel like their morale dropped when they initially did it. They were like, well, somebody's like, well, what if we use it? They went up, then they saw it, now they're trying to come down. I think it's now Friday, right? They've delayed their app.
Yep.
It'll come out. It'll not be that. People are going to be really mean on the internet. But you can't deny that by the time we get to releasing this game, more people will have heard of this game because of this whole thing. And like, in the end, it's going to be, hey, this was all for the best for us as game developers. But the short term is going to be a rude awakening on Friday when it's officially not a Kojima game. Unless it's a Kojima game.
I mean, revealing your game via an app seems like a very Kojima move.
Right, and it's such a weird thing of like, we're gonna have a PlayStation 5 app that has different trailers that will, it's like, what are you talking about? Dude, this is not how small developers reveal their games for, and that's why people are running away with it the other direction. And you're like, there are a bunch of really weird coincidences happening.
I agree with that. Only time will tell, but I agree with what you said, Greg, that no matter what happens, no matter how this plays out, now a ton of people know about the existence of this game that if they followed the typical like small indie team playbook, they would not have had this many this kind of attention.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Oof. I mean, we talk about the like dedication of Silent Hill, like investigators, like figuring out all these connections and crazy things. I mean, I played PT. I have no idea how people figured out how to get to that actual ending. Like, Greg is crap. Here.
I have to bring this up because I know if anybody else tried to do this, I imagine it was Greg. Greg, you and I both reviewed the PlayStation 5. We both got early consoles.
Sure did.
Obligatory
sure did.
Thank you to Sony for that.
Hashtag console provided by PlayStation.
Exactly. The first thing I did when I got my review unit in was I copied PT to my PS5. Yeah. And I played it on my PS5. It worked pre-release.
Oh, they blinked that out.
And then someone at Konami was like, nope, and took it away.
Yeah. I have my video up that is like, here's how me trying to do it, it doesn't work. And then I forget who it was. Yeah, somebody else at another site had put up a video being like, it did work for a brief second, and then this is how they took it away, you know, 2 days after I had the system. It's like, yeah.
Why are you like this, Konami? Why are you like this?
I have no idea.
Let's just slice and effect this to hell, right? Like, this is something that you could play right now and people be like, oh, that's cool. Instead, let's keep making it a news story that you keep screwing with it. Like, just let it be. Let it be. Who cares?
Yeah. It ran just fine, too. It's not like it behaved oddly on the PS5. It ran just as it does on the PS4. But someone in Konami was like, we can't have this. We can't let people have fun with this.
It's one of the saddest stories, modern Konami, where they were and where they are now. I miss 16-bit and 32-bit era Konami so much. And of course, that's not a hot take. Everybody misses that version of Konami. But God, if you had told me that, you know, years later, this is what would have become of Konami, I would never have believed you. And it sucks.
I'm going to be honest with you, as probably the oldest person in the chat, I didn't give a shit about Konami in the 16-bit era. Super Nintendo Konami, I didn't care. It was Metal Gear Solid that really made me care about Konami at all. And then, you know, I got into other games of theirs later on, but I did not even notice their existence. I probably played their games, but I wasn't really thinking about them until MGS1.
Steve, man, Choosing Violence by writing off Turtles in Time and Buster Busts Loose.
I'm not saying those were bad games. I'm saying that like, if you had asked 13-year-old Steve Bowling, like, hey, who made that Turtles game you like? I'd be like, I don't know. But if you asked 15-year-old Steve Bowling who made Metal Gear Solid, I'd be like, that is Konami.
Right.
Yeah.
I got you.
Well, before we move on, we got some more super chats. First up from XA with a €2 donation says, hey, I'm a huge fan of yours and first time live. Well, welcome. I'm glad you're able to make
it
live.
Thank
you very much. That is awesome.
Yeah.
And then Grantles with a $5 donation says, can't wait for the Castlevania bicycle next. there's a pun in there somewhere.
Don't give them ideas. It'll happen.
Oh, goodness. Well, I guess we should just continue this hope train, especially in Ash's case.
Oh, here we go.
So let's go ahead and move on to story number 3. All right. So Capcom is seeking licensing partners for Mega Man's 35th anniversary in 2022. And this is significant because when they did this back in 2016, they got Mega Man X's 25th anniversary, and again in 2020 for Battle Network's anniversary. And I think even then it was basically every time I've done this, we've gotten a collection. So this gives Ash further hope.
I hope there's something going on here. I mean, look, when the last time there was an anniversary stream, and that doesn't directly relate to them, you know, seeking partners. But if they're seeking partners, that tells me they're going to celebrate it in some way. And when they did an anniversary stream last time, we got Mega Man 11. So I'm hoping this means that they're planning some sort of thing, some sort of celebration, something for his 35th anniversary. And I don't know. I've learned not to get my hopes up when it comes to Mega Man, but we know they're happy with the sales of 11 in the various collections, so I'm just going to cross my fingers. And the company, Capcom, did issue an official statement back in March asking fans to remain patient vis-a-vis Battle Network's anniversary, saying, you know, COVID messed things up. Please be patient. So maybe there's still something coming on that front. Of course, E3 had nothing, but I'm just crossing my fingers over here, hoping that we're going to get something for Mega Man's 35th anniversary.
See, I'm not going to lie. Years of reporting news in the gaming space has made me a huge cynic. When I read something like this, I'm like, okay, so we're getting some T-shirts. Like, Capcom is going to license out the likeness of Mega Man for some toys and some shirts, and that's what this story means. But I do agree that there's more to come, most likely. But I would caution folks, because I always tell folks, like, don't read between the lines when it comes to gaming news, because oftentimes there's nothing between them.
Right.
So, you know, expect merch. That's what I'm going to say from this. Just expect merchandise, but don't like put hopes and expectations on the developers that they'll deliver your dream Mega Man collection, because this does not say that.
We just got done telling people not to get their hopes up for Capcom's E3 presentation, because again, they told us exactly what they were showing. Mega Man wasn't on it. Was Mega Man in the presentation? No. So it was
this,
a
this
shame,
being delivered to you
no
by the man
there.
That wore a Mega Man helmet throughout the presentation.
He had to be just ready. To keep hope alive.
He's
but,
like,
you know,
I just need to make sure in case
it
happens.
I want to manifest.
In case it happens,
I'm ready. Manifest hope. Exactly. But the problem was that
you didn't have your E-Tank mug and your Mega Buster, you know, your wearable Mega Buster. Damn. You didn't go
strap a magnet to your head. You might have had a better shot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, guy. You're right. It's my fault. There was no announcement during Capcom.
I
didn't wear enough Mega Man merch. Yeah. But
well, speaking of Mega Man merch, there's a little thing not related to this, but kind of, I guess, a next to it. Whatever. Basically, Mega Man Legends is having its OST soundtrack coming to vinyl, and the heck did this start? Audio cassettes? When are cassettes
audio
coming back?
I didn't know this either. Why? And actually, I just ordered, I love Ship to Shore, because those of you, some of you know, I collect video game music vinyls. I'm a big video game music fan. And they just recently announced the Klonoa 1 and 2 soundtracks coming to vinyl and cassette. And that was the first I'd heard of cassette, I guess, coming back in some way. I didn't buy them. I just bought the vinyls. But yeah, I guess this is a thing now where cassette is making some kind of comeback. I don't know.
You know, some people say that vinyl has a richer sound than digital, but I don't think I heard anybody say why cassettes are good.
Right.
I mean,
this is pretty cool, though.
Cassettes, for those of you that aren't ancient, like
oh man, old man Steve coming through to explain cassette.
They are not in any way like superior from an audio perspective. They aren't. What made them great was that they were durable and an easy way to transport music before the advent of CDs. Yeah. God, I hate saying that. But it's I mean, they were easy to
carry.
Kids
today,
around.
What the hell's a CD?
I know, right? Like, I think about my daughter who is 8, and I'm like, someday I'm going to show her like a PlayStation 1 disc, and she's going to be like, the hell is that?
Yeah.
Why do you have this dusty ass thing? But, like, I fully anticipate by the time my daughter is like a teenager that it'll be hard to purchase physical games. Like, it'll be more of a boutique thing. Like, limited run will be kind of your main means of getting physical goods. I don't know. Like, in 10 years, that's a console generation and a half away. That's also terrifying. But I really wonder. I would love to talk to someone at Sony and ask them what the split is. Well, I guess the split on PlayStation hardware right now is whatever the hell you can find.
Yeah, right.
But
yeah, whatever.
When supply levels out, I really wonder which one is the dominant SKU there. If the PS5 digital is worth more, because you know, Sony was kind enough to send me the disc model, but I don't own a PS5 disc at all yet. I don't have one.
Yeah,
and that
me
is.
Neither.
Yeah,
but I think that's
either. Yeah,
that's what'll be interesting about it. Where I bet that comparison in terms of, hey, was it the disc or the discless version that's selling better when you can't actually buy them? I think in a lot of ways it's going to be a moot point, because I think it's that thing where when I was buying before we got our review copies and I was pre-ordering, right? Like, of the pre-orders we got, I was going to take a disc version, fully knowing that I would probably never buy a disc for it. But what if I got sent one? What if I wanted to watch one of my old DVDs? What a million what ifs. Exactly. Like, well, it's $100 extra. I might as well go that way with it, right? And I feel like that's going to be the thing, is people still get off on this last stop of what physical media could be if that's what you want it to be.
Yeah, that is true. I know that my main consideration was, what if a publisher sends me like a physical game?
Me
and
too.
I was like, I don't want to be screwed and tell them I can't cover it.
It doesn't happen too often, but I think Pokemon, whenever they send codes, they send physical. You do not get codes for Pokemon. You get
Nintendo,
physical.
Nintendo
every time.
Just does weird things in general. Like in the business of
Pokemon,
games and reviewing, like Nintendo is kind of on their own island over here doing what they do. Yeah. I think 90% of stuff these days though is digital, even when you're talking about you know, copies provided for review or content creation. But
And I think, you know, I think there are arguments to be made to, for owning physical copies of things if that's what you want. But to go back to what you were saying, Steve, you know, I too grew up with cassettes, and I don't understand. Like, I get collecting vinyls because you got the beautiful sleeve art, right? There's the novelty of all the beautiful art and the inserts. There's something cool about that. I have never once in my life missed cassettes. And maybe that's because I didn't grow up with vinyl, but I did grow up with cassettes. But, like, I remember those cassettes getting chewed up by the, you know, by the stereos and stuff, and the tape would be messed up. I just,
what is have it breaking your songs by rewinding it so you get to the beginning of the next one? Yeah.
Exactly. Like, what's the appeal, I guess, of owning something on cassette these days?
Neoxin in the YouTube chat mentions, perhaps it's Guardians of the Galaxy as they make cassettes popular popular again, which makes sense. Which also makes me wonder, is the Zune going to come back? Because that's what he got at the end of the second movie.
Come on. Too far.
I think it's more, it's nostalgia, right? And so when you want to team it up with something for Mega Man, right? Like, I've seen this and I'm stretching now and I don't remember as I jump out, but it's something like Final Fight, something like these games that we grew up on, or I grew up on, Steve grew up on, where it was that you'd get these games. I would have the cassette tape for something else. It's about trying to merge that nostalgia for a time. So if you're celebrating Mega Man 35th or whatever, right, you're trying to get in, not necessarily in the same promotion, but get everything around the same thing. Like, that's what harkens back. You remember sitting there with your NES or whatever and your cassette tapes on the side.
I really appreciate that everybody's acting like I'm not as old as I am. This is great. Keep it coming. This is great.
I'll take it. I
just turned 21 today. This is great. What are those?
Are you the youngest, Ash? I don't even know. Like, how old are you?
I'm 36, so I think I'm the second oldest. I think Steve is the oldest.
I don't turn 36 until September, so.
How old is Steve?
Okay. I am a hair away from being 39, so I'll turn 39 in August, about 2 months.
Yeah, I'm 38, and I'll be 39 in April. So I got
you. Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
So. Oh, this is nice.
I mean, I have never been the youngest. What the heck?
I love this. Okay, this is cool. Whenever I hang out with one of my friends, I'm often the oldest. I'm like, oh, this is great. Okay. Well, I guess to bring things back around, it is really cool though that this is the first time Mega Man Legends soundtrack is going to be available in North America ever. Yeah. And the first time since 98 that it's going to be available in a physical format, including Japan. So it's just really cool if you're into Mega Man music, video game music. Sure. And it's as Proto Dude says, this comes from Proto Dude's Rock Band Corner, as he says in his post, it's always good to see official Legend support because it's Mega Man Legends, which Capcom likes to act doesn't exist most of the time. So
this isn't a game that ever happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about that.
Well, speaking of good music, let's go ahead and move on to our next story.
Nice segue.
Thank you. Actually, before I even get it, well, let me just do the thing. I forgot to do our super chats. I'm so sorry, guys. Oh. Either way, the story.
You ruined it.
I'm sorry. Anyway, the story itself is Sonic Team's Takashi Iizuka has been talking a lot about Sonic Origins, the return of Sonic 3 and Knuckles, and even hoping that the new Sonic game in 2022 will lay the groundwork for it like Adventure did. But who cares about that? Let's go to the Super Chats real quick. Alan Wilkinson with a £2 donation.
Yeah.
Saying cassettes are back, sound wave superior. That is true. Black Ninja with $2 donation saying 1 penny for each episode so far, one for the NXT for the next 100. So there we go.
Yes.
So
thank you so much, Black. 1 penny for the next 100 episodes. We're making bank. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, now that's out of the way. Yes, Iizuka is talking about Sonic. So there we are. He has some interesting things to say. He's basically hyping up the fact that they have these versions out, and what he said about the return of Sonic 3 and Knuckles is, you know, basically pure nostalgia. He says, I think a lot of fans really appreciate the news that we will include Sonic 3 and Knuckles in Sonic Origins, but I think I am the most excited out of everyone. It was the first Sonic title that I worked on and is a title that is really close to my heart, so having the chance to re-release this title after decades is something I'm really looking forward to. As development, man, he says title a lot. As development on the title is currently progressing, every time I see Sonic 3 and Knuckles data, I'm reminded of all the hard work and excitement I had when I was younger making that title. Oh my God, it really brings back a lot of memories for me. So it's nostalgic for him to get that in there, and just basically him talking up Sonic Origins. But I'd say the more interesting thing is him talking about Sonic 2022 and basically saying how he hopes it lays the groundwork for Sonic games for the next, you know, for the future, in the same way that Sonic Adventure did when it came out 20 years ago. So
that's, we'll
see if that actually happened. That's a high bar.
To put yourself on. I was gonna say, that's, I mean, even looking past, you know, people have varying opinions on how well or how not well Sonic Adventure has aged from a gameplay standpoint, but just in terms of the legacy it's carried on for over the years, in terms of what Sonic Adventure represented for the franchise and some of the mimetic qualities it has turned out to carry, that's trying to get Sonic, I won't say the actual name, I guess, but the next Sonic 2022 game on that level before it's even out yet, that's a high bar to set.
Yeah, I feel
like you got to shoot for the stars, right? You got to go out there and try. I guess every game you're making, right, you want to hit that level. I mean, it's a lot.
That's true.
A lot of talk and a lot of time. You to put that out into a fan base as into Sonic as the Sonic fan base is, you say something like that, that is going to chase you down. But you hope he understands what he's saying.
Yeah, well, I feel especially, like. Oh, go ahead.
Especially because of that same fan base has been clamoring for an actual Sonic Adventure remake or Sonic Adventure 3 for so long. To invoke the Sonic Adventure name is, I feel like, again, given how intense Sonic fans can be, and I say that as a Sonic fan, I feel like he's setting himself up for failure or disaster or both by setting those expectations so early.
I say this a lot, though. I say this a lot, but that's part of the gig when it comes to creating games. Like, you're never gonna see, like, Eiji Aonuma on stage at Nintendo take a drag off a cigarette, and he's like, this new Zelda's not coming together. He's like, it is just a fucking mess. Like, they're never gonna be like, well, this game is gonna be at least a little bit worse than Ocarina of Time. They're just not gonna do that.
Right. Listen, we tried really hard, and we missed the mark. But you think you're gonna like it, you just won't love it.
Yeah, exactly. We're shooting for a real middle-of-the-road experience with this new game. We want you to kind of like it, but we recommend waiting for a sale. Like, it's
right. I mean, there's a big gulf between that and we're hoping this matches.
See, Sonic, but that's my point, is like, they're selling. Like, they're not going to come out and say Sonic Adventure is definitely, you're going to like that more than this. They're going to come out always and say, we're trying to make the best game we can make. Because it's objectively true. I'm certain they don't come into the office and go, we're going to make this game with as little effort as possible.
Phone it in, all right? Yeah, we just got to make sure we lose the rights if we don't make a Sonic game this year. So.
I think if you say just that, though, if you say, hey, we're going to make the best Sonic game ever, that you still, you know, absolve yourself of the responsibility of invoking Sonic Adventure specifically, right?
I suppose, like,
they've never, I don't remember them saying this about, like, Generations or Colors or anything like that. It's just,
God forbid, Forces.
Yeah. This is the first time they've really said something like this. It feels
very
like
specifically.
And it's interesting they call back to Sonic Adventure, because I'd argue, like, it's more of a story. It must be a storytelling aspect or something like that, because there's a wide gulf between looking at Sonic Adventure and then looking at Sonic Colors or Unleashed or what have you. So it must be that storytelling element, and I have no idea. No idea what they're up to.
Yeah, I mean, the way I see, I'm from what I've read of this game, of this 2022 Sonic game, it sounds exciting to me. I am a huge Sonic Adventure fan, and I'll say from what, you know, my take off of the things I've read, which could or could not be true, but seems like they are. It seems like it will have some of Adventure's DNA in it. It'll play in a somewhat similar sense, based on what I've seen, and I'm for it. Like, I like what I've heard so far about the game. I just, you know, I'll wait to see more from Sega. But at this point, I feel like with 3D Sonic specifically, it would be really hard to make the game worse than I would expect. Like, those expectations are extremely low.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't know the last time I saw a brand new 3D Sonic and was just like, oh my God, I can't wait. Like, I play him because I have a long history with the character and I love, you know, I love to see what they've put him into, but
right.
At this point, I just want Mania 2. Like, that is the game I'll get really excited for.
See, that was my thing. Mania, like, when I'm looking through this and, like, you guys were talking about it, you're like, oh yeah, you know, pure nostalgia. And it's like, I am a Sega kid. I grew up a Sega kid. Yep. I had a Sega Master System. I had the Game Gear. I had the Saturn. Like, the list goes on, right? But it's like, to be like, oh man, it's, yeah, I'm glad the Sega Asia versions of Sonic 1 and 2, the original. And it's like, is that what, haven't we done that enough? Sonic Mania freaking killed it. Like, it was awesome. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, don't we want more of that? Well, I'd rather see them double down on that than talk about, like, how pumped they are that, we're getting a 4:3 screen ratio. And I'm, like, all right.
I mean, I'll say this. The idea of playing Sonic 3 and Knuckles at all, again, on modern platforms is super exciting because that game's incredible. And I will say, the idea of playing Sonic 3 and Knuckles on modern platforms in 16:9 format, that's exciting as hell. Like, I cannot wait for Sonic Origins. But still, even put a new 2D Sonic, you know, Mania 2 next to that, I would take the new game. I want a Mania 2 so badly. But in the meantime, whether they're working on that right now or not, it is pretty damn exciting, though, that they're finally bringing Sonic 3 and Knuckles back.
Yeah. One thing I want to point out, I never knew, Greg, that you were a Sega kid growing up.
Yeah.
I feel like every Sega kid that I've ever talked to ended up in games somehow. Like, we all ended up that inferiority.
There's a reason that Yakuza story from like 2 days ago popped so hard. We're like, Yagami's gonna have a playable Sega Master System in his office, and we're all like, ooh, tell me more.
I didn't have a Master System, but I did go from NES to Genesis and then Saturn and so forth. So
if you had a mom in the 80s who walked into Toys R Us, looked at everyone herding around the NES and was like, I'm going to go somewhere else. Yeah. Then you probably are a games journalist today.
Yeah, for me, I was talking about it. It was that we went to Toys R Us, me and my mom, and it was to pick up or look for real Ghostbuster toys, because that's all I wanted. And she made the mistake of going down the video game aisle, and I was walking, and I stopped, and I turned, and I slammed my finger on the glass, and I was like, what is that? And it was the Sega Master System copy of Ghostbusters, and it had the Ghost logo. Oh, yeah, that game
is so good.
So good. The best version was Master System. She's like, that's a video game, and I was like, I want that for my birthday. So, you know, a couple months later, I don't remember what the difference was, obviously, but like, she got the game, Uncle Mike got the system, and I was a Sega kid. And you know what I mean? I got a great report card in first grade, got my Genesis with Sonic bundled in. You know what I mean? Like, I was in. I was ready to go. And man, that was a rude awakening, going to Travis's house for the first time ever. Like, he's like, you want to play video games? He's like, yeah. And he went and he turned on Mario, and I was like, who the hell is this? Like, what is this guy? What is it? What? He's like, I thought you played games. I'm like, yeah, I do play games. Don't you have a Sega? He's like, what's a Sega?
Oh, man. The great schoolyard battle, of course.
Yeah.
I was lucky and privileged enough to... I was probably more of a Nintendo kid, but I was lucky and privileged enough to have both. And so I had a Genesis. I didn't have a Master System, but I did have a Game Gear that I actually recently dug out long ago. And I could not believe how big and chunky that, like, that's a bludgeoning weapon these days. You could, that's like, it feels big.
I got my out of context, but yeah, it felt big in my hands even as an adult. Like, how the heck did I hold that as a kid?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, just this weekend we were at an antique fair, and they had a Game Gear, and I picked it up, and I'm like, geez Louise, this is a big one.
Seeing a piece of your childhood at an antique fair is also just a painful experience.
I don't think I have it anymore, but I also had a Sega Nomad. And let me tell you, playing Sonic 3 and Knuckles with a Game Genie in that thing, you have a tower of games coming out of your Sega Nomad, which is just really weird looking. Ash Paulson,
just the coolest kid at school, has a portable Sega Genesis. He's like, yeah, my dad's on Animaniacs. No big deal.
I never brought that thing to school. Are you kidding me? The only video game related thing I ever brought to school was my Game Boy and Pokemon, because that was, I was allowed to do that. We were allowed at that school to do that. But, oh my God, I would never have brought such a thing.
To bring this all full circle.
Such a monstrosity.
To bring it all full circle, I will never forget the day I brought my Game Boy to school. And I walked to my locker, and I had my Game Boy and my lunch in different brown paper bags. And I couldn't unlock my locker, so I dropped my lunch. But it turned out that I had the Game Boy and the lunch in the wrong hands. And I picked that Game Boy up, and it wouldn't work, and I cried. And then eventually, back to how Steve got his computer to work, I eventually found that if I dropped it on the floor again, I could turn it back on. And so this Game Boy became a thing of, it worked fine for days, and then it wouldn't, and I'd drop it and pick it back up and turn it on, and it would work. I was like, oh my gosh.
That's amazing. That is amazing. Awesome. Oh gosh!
Well, I'm glad that it worked out, that your Game Boy ended up being okay.
And that was like a crucial thing, because my mom, that was the famous, every parent has their breaking point, I think, and the Game Boy was it, where I remember distinctly my mom going, I am not spending $100 on a Game Boy. And like, Aunt Del had to buy it for me.
It's funny when you put it like that, and yet people are complaining about $70 games.
Oh, totally. Like
$100
exactly.
For a Game Boy.
Well, yeah. People
complain, to take it back to the 80s, about game prices now. Carts, like when carts were a thing,
right?
Your Chrono Triggers, your Star Foxes, your Fantasy Stars on the Sega Masters, those games were $100 back then.
I didn't know that.
I saw old ads and see N64 games for like $90. I'm like, what the hell?
Yep. And N64 games, super expensive, like Kirby 64. I remember that being $89.99. Like, that's just, it is what it is. I mean,
In Japan, at launch for the N64, Super Mario 64 retailed for about $90.
Mm-hmm. Jeez.
Holy crap. Yeah.
Anyway.
It's funny how world, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun. Anyway, before we move on, I got some more super chats. First up from Black Ninja once again with a $2 donation, saying, "I try to not spoil you all, but I can't resist."
Thank you. Well, thank you so much, Black Ninja.
We enjoy being spoiled. Nathan, the future voice actor, with a $7.77 donation, says, "Happy 100th episode! You guys positively impacted my life. Being in the GVG community helped me grow so much. Ash, get ready to lose in Mega Man 7 soon." So, there you go.
I am
a challenger.
I know you've been saying that a lot, Nathan. I feel like you called me out several times now about our impending Mega Man 7 Fight of Founder session. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to playing it with you, man. So, let's do it.
And then finally, Jaden Buck with a $2 donation says, "Want to extend that tower even more? Add a 32X.
Oh, God.
I had a cousin who had basically that entire Genesis monstrosity.
Tower is what it was called, baby.
Exactly. He had the Sega CD add-on, had the 32X. That's how I first saw Sonic CD and Knuckles Chaotix. I'm like, what are these? And I look at what's on top of his Genesis, like, I don't want that.
I will say one of my favorite things that I've received in my career covering games is when Sega sent over the review unit for the Genesis Mini, they followed it up with like a little plastic, like, just, it does nothing, but you can, they recreated the whole Tower of Power for the Genesis Mini, and they only sent it out to games media. So like, you can't buy it. It's just a weird, useless, but really cool add-on that they sent over.
Yeah, we all marked out of the office for that when that happened. Me and Tim were like, "Oh my god, they did this!" And I remember all that stuff. I remember, and that was like such a, you think now with like, you know, Xbox and backwards compatibility, but I remember when we got the Genesis and they had the adapter that you could play all the Master System games with it, and my parents being like, "Well, this is just a good deal because your entire library comes over." I'm like, "Well, there's still, we could keep the other system too," but like, at that idea, right, of like, my toy, these video game toys, the way an adult, you know, in 89, 88 would have thought about that, right, of having multiple, a Master System and a Genesis laid out in the entertainment center, like, totally preposterous. Instead, we'll buy this monstrosity that we shove into the top of the Genesis to play Ghostbusters, and then Ghost House.
Yep.
Right.
The card, never forget.
Wow. All right, well, let's go ahead and move on to our next story, which is all about, I don't know. I don't even know how to transition to this one. It's Tekken.
Fair enough. It's Tekken.
Tekken, it's here.
In the latest episode of Harada's Bar, Tekken director Katsuhiro Harada, he has his own talk show, ended up talking about Tekken Cross Street Fighter, and he revealed that it was about 30% complete before the project died, mainly because of the low sales of Street Fighter Cross Tekken and how well that went over. So he said, "We were working really hard on that. We really were. Wish we could show you the models and stuff. We had really nice models. I really wanted to show them Chun-Li. I wanted to show you guys all the characters." And they basically just comes across as this huge, disappointing missed opportunity. And it makes me wonder, like, would Tekken Cross Street Fighter have been better than Street Fighter Cross Tekken?
We answered the question. Great to know.
There you go. As long as they didn't have the gems, yes, I think that it would have been a shoe-in for that whole gem system did not go over well for Street Fighter Cross Tekken. So I feel like if they had dropped that for Tekken Cross Street Fighter, it would have been a pretty easy shoe-in. One thing that's really interesting about this on the Event Hubs article is that in the episode of Harada's Bar, Apparently, it was alluded to that we've already seen Akuma's model from Tekken Cross Street Fighter, and it actually looked a lot like what he looked like in Tekken 7, which makes sense. So that's pretty neat. I guess in a way, a relic of what Tekken Cross Street Fighter would have been and looked like did survive in Akuma's model in Tekken 7. So that's
pretty neat. I always posited that when they added Akuma to Tekken 7, that was essentially like an unofficial cancellation of the game publicly. Just because, I mean, the way these deals work, and they have to work out the contracts for using Capcom's characters in their own games. So I'm sure that they had to go and rework that deal somewhat to get Akuma into Tekken. But I stopped counting on this game coming around.
I gave up on this game a long time.
Years ago.
I think everybody did.
I guess that's why it's interesting to hear it come back up again. Like, I think we all assumed it was just canceled and gone, and that was it. And of course, it is. But it is interesting just to hear Harada-san bring it back up for any reason. And
for any reason at all. Why would you?
Yeah, for any reason at all. Well, yeah. And I wish we could get a little bit more insight onto what exactly led to its cancellation. We never will. But my guess is that it was just maybe the chilly response to Street Fighter Cross Tekken, and maybe it was just decided it wasn't worth moving forward with that.
I do have to say, though, I appreciate the fact that he runs his, like, personal brand out of a bar. That is,
yeah,
that is 100% what I want to do with my life. I want to talk about video games. I want to drink and I want to eat chicken, and that's pretty much all of it. So if I could somehow combine all of those into an actual thing that people watch, I would. Well, guys, today's news tonight would probably be no more.
But, yeah. Guys, right. I gotta leave. I can live my dream of just broadcasting from the bar.
I need a plate of chicken wings and someone to listen to me ramble.
Oh, dude, I'd come work with you. I'm there.
There we go. Yeah, there you go. I know. I'm gonna take this off topic for just a sec, but I remember when I did Kind of Funny Games Daily with you, we chatted for a bit, and you were workshopping a concept for a show in which you would travel around and eat chicken wings. Yeah. And I was like, this sounds like my goddamn dream.
Right? Yeah. And with Greg Miller, dude. That's the whole reason there is a Kind of Funny. The entire reason there's a Kind of Funny is that I went to VidCon while I was still working at IGN, fell in love with YouTube, and I was like, I want to make a show called Winging It with Greg Miller, where I would, we'd go to PAX, we'd go to whatever, and then I would stay an extra day, bring a cameraman in, film a show where I eat chicken wings in that city. And I was like, the problem is I don't know how to edit video and I don't know how to use YouTube. So I'm going to start my own channel and then I will do other shows to get to Winging It with Greg Miller. And that was where I made Oration and I made Conversation with Colin. And then we made the Game Over Greggy show. And then we started having too much fun making content. And then Game Over Greggy became Kind of Funny. And here we are.
I love nice. It.
Yeah. I was.
Well, I haven't made the Winging show. One day I will.
Yeah. You had stopped off for a meetup in Phoenix. And at the time I was working like 2 miles away from where you were going, and I was like, I bet if I took like a half day off, I could run to like the best chicken wing place in Arizona, grab them and bring them to the meetup. And I was like, but the meetup's out of Portillo's, that would just be rude.
yeah
it'd be like in college
someday, if you're ever in Phoenix, I will show you the best chicken wings in America, hands down.
100% I'll be back. What's the place called?
It is called ATL Wings.
I'm looking it up,
which is nice. Ironic the naming considering I'm in Phoenix. But they are. Yeah. I can't bring Steve, someone to Phoenix without insisting they eat there.
Steve, whenever you do come out here to visit me in LA, I'm taking you to a place called Michindak. It's a Korean fried chicken place that is just to die for, and you're gonna be so happy you tried it.
Absolutely.
Oh man, you're gonna be.
I love that I'm so addicted. My mouth is literally watering.
I know. We obviously need to shoot a pilot of this show with Greg at some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. I guess to bring things back to Tekken Cross Street Fighter really quick, I do think it's really cool. There's something romantic about the fact that in the end, Tekken Cross Street Fighter did happen, and it's called Super Smash Brothers Ultimate because Kazuya is going to be in Smash, and so in a weird way. That actually didn't happen. You know, Ryu and Kazuya.
It's even better now because it's Tekken Cross Street Fighter Cross Fatal Fury.
Yeah, which is really damn cool. I mean,
Smash Ultimate is basically Mugen at this point. Like, it is a 13-year-old's fighting game mashup dream.
100%. Yeah. I've said this on Twitter before, but if like you showed my 15 or 13 year old self, whatever, the roster for Smash Ultimate, I don't even know.
There's no way you'd believe it.
I probably wouldn't believe it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah. And of course, there are, of course, some that would be like, who are all these characters? But it would be impossible to believe.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
All right. Classic Metroid Kip does point out that Tekken 7 has Street Fighter and Fatal Fury 2. So I forgot about Geese and Tekken 7.
Good point.
My Shiranui is in Tekken or Terry is?
No. Geese Howard.
Oh, Geese Howard. Jeez.
Oh, okay.
I remember that. I distinctly remember the reveal trailer for him. I think it was at I'm blanking on it, but the one big fighting game scene Ash always goes to. I don't know why I'm blanking on it now.
Oh, Evo?
Evo, yeah. It was at Evo, where it was him just doing his one move and just the entire crowd shouting, predictable! Predictable!
Predictable, yeah. Uh-huh. It's like, oh, Evo's so much fun. I can't wait for it to come
sometimes
out.
I'm not in the fighting game community, but it'd be really funny to see it. Watcher TL points out that Mai is in Dead or Alive, which, yeah, that seems that's a fit, yeah.
That's a fit.
That's where the not-so-good boys and girls go.
I just want to say cheers to Boltmouse X in the YouTube chat for calling out Rival Schools, because hell yeah, Rival Schools is bomb. Love that game, and Capcom should do more with it.
There's a lot of things they should do more with, but we'll see if that ever happens.
Well said. Yeah.
All right. Well, you guys ready to get a little... Well, before we move on to that, sorry, I almost forgot again. Luis Benitez with a $10 donation says, congrats on 100 episodes. Here's to 100 more. Heck yeah.
Thank you much, Luis. Thank you very much.
And it's really unbelievable. But another thing that I find kind of unbelievable.
Nice.
Story 6. So Sony's Jim Ryan says the company supports and encourages crossplay across consoles.
Of course Jim Ryan says this.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes. He also fully believes that old games are worth keeping around now. It's almost like, we got bad press for this. I should change my opinion.
Yeah.
Funny that.
Yeah. This is just damage control, the news story. I mean, of course, that's what they're going to say now and act like that was always the case when it definitely was not. But I'm glad that it seems that all the, you know, outrage finally led, you know, not toxic outrage, but just all the pushback from consumers that want crossplay. It seems like it's finally worked. Sony's finally kowtowing to that, and we have seen more games supporting crossplay on PlayStation, and that's a good thing for everybody.
100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mentioned it on Twitter the other day, but I played No Man's Sky with my friend on his PS5. My wife was on our Series X, and I was on my PC, and it was awesome. I loved it. You know, I wish we could have that experience across more games, and I do think that Sony has been on the wrong side of history with this one, but it does seem like they're coming around. And
the problem is based on what we've seen from the Apple Epic thing, right, is that it's they've come around a little bit, and they still this thing of they have this, you know, we're still number one in terms of consoles, right? And if you're gonna do this, fine, but if the stats get back to us that, you know, they're buying other stuff on Apple or Xbox or whatever, but then playing more on PlayStation, we need a cut of that. And that's what Apple is, or what Epic's doing with them in Fortnite, right? But you can look at Borderlands 3, right? Where Borderlands 3 came out and it's crossplay finally everywhere but PlayStation. And and Gearbox threw 2K under the bus and was like, this is a 2K decision. And then 2K hasn't given an answer and PlayStation haven't given an answer, but you know the answer is going to be that it's the same thing. And they're like, well, no, this is not only is it like, whatever the money part of it, what a headache. What a headache now to watch every cross-platform player and be like, all right, cool, this person's spending 80% of their time on PlayStation, but they bought it on Xbox. Crap. All right, hold on. You know, it's these little archaic things that are still tripping it up, which suck.
Right. Yeah, they actually have a bit in this article about that whole thing with Borderlands 3. Ryan was actually specifically asked about this, and he replied that he didn't want to talk about a live business issue with a longstanding partner, but stressed that its policies are consistent across all of the publishers.
See, they're consistent, meaning that that what they did to Epic is probably what they do to everybody.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know why this is so funny to me. Probably because I'm 12 years old. But my favorite take on Jim comes from our live audience chat. Rob Arman X saying Jim can support my nuts. There you go. Right out there, Rob Arman X.
This is why he didn't want you to have cross-platform play. Remember, he's thinking of children originally. He was worried about the children, he said, when he didn't want Fortnite to go everywhere.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Too good.
Oh, goodness.
I will say the one thing that that is really disappointing about this for me is my PS5 is my favorite place to play multi-platform games right now. The experience with, you know, I rave about this. It's the dumbest feature on the PS5, but the mic and the speaker in the DualSense are fucking phenomenal. They are great. And I like the idea that I can just be voice chatting with my friend as we're playing a PS5 game and not have to wear a damn headset. So it makes it, that feature alone makes it my de facto place to go to play with other people if I want to talk to them while I play. Hell, I even watched I watched the season premiere of Rick and Morty on YouTube TV in a party chat over my, you know, with my DualSense acting as like a bridge between me and my friend as we both watched. I just really enjoy the multiplayer experience on PlayStation. It's just a shame that they do have this weird archaic system for crossplay. It would be nice if I could just assume when I pick up a game that if my friend has it on another platform, I could play it. But it is still very much a case by case basis, and that sucks.
Yeah,
I'm still super stoked to see what happens, you know, probably what next year, but even beyond that, as a relationship grows with Discord, you know, PlayStation giving them the money and having this thing now, and like, what does that mean? Because if we can get Discord straight up integrated into PlayStation, that'd be awesome.
Oh yeah, I have said that I want Discord to replace voice chat on literally every platform. Just give me Discord integration. I mean, Xbox Live does an okay job. Nintendo just doesn't do it at all. And Sony system is good, but counterintuitive, like in the OS. But yeah, if I could do it all through Discord, I'd be really happy. Just have one unifying system for all my gaming voice chat.
Nice.
But I'm at least happy about the rich presence thing. It is such a dumb thing to wish for, but I do like seeing, you know, what game I'm playing up in the little status bar on Discord. I mean, it rats me out sometimes, but I like that it can actually show that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like the dream would, I would love to have voice chat integration in Nintendo hardware, but of course that'll never happen because it runs so counter to Nintendo's whole philosophy on that whole, and even their ability on that whole front of things. But that would be so nice to have. But, or as you said, Steve, just to have that solution be part of every, you know, piece of gaming hardware. I would love that.
God, that'd be fantastic, right?
Yeah, that really would. Also, Next the Hedgehog in our YouTube chat says, speaking of crossovers, did you guys know that Sonic is in the Shin Megami Tensei and the Fist of the North Star mobile games as a demon and a playable character respectively? And if that isn't the most 2021 statement you could make, I don't even know. That's so weird, but I love it. And thank you for sharing that bit of information, Next the Hedgehog. I was not aware.
Yeah, I have to wonder about the Fist of the North Star integration because, I mean, if you've never seen Fist of the North Star, it is violent as hell.
Right.
Like, I can't picture Sonic like touching a dude's pressure points and the guy exploding into just a sack of blood like that. But then again, maybe I could. I don't know.
I mean, you never know.
Just that image is just hilarious. Yeah, it's so weird to think of Sonic in a fist. That would be like, yeah, that is just, the two don't go together at all, given the extreme level of violence in Fist of the North Star. So, yeah.
Oh boy, yeah. But I love how like everybody hears the story is like, yeah, we don't believe you, Jim Ryan. Moving on. Yeah,
exactly. That's the funny thing about PlayStation, right? Is like Phil Spencer, you feel like he's giving you the straight information. You feel like he's a gamer. You feel like he cares. And like Jim Ryan, you're just like, all right, whatever, dude. Like, you don't feel connected to this audience in any way, shape, or form.
Not even at all.
Yeah.
All right, before we move on, Lon Lon with a two Brazilian, was it Real?
Real, yeah.
Real, thank you, Steve. Says, congrats on 100th. My bosses are cool peeps. Well, appreciate that. I don't know if we're technically his boss, but we've hired out a few times.
Take the promotion.
Yeah, there you go. Sure, well, thank you very much for that, Lon Lon. And yeah, I mean, we're just happy to have you along to help us and be with us on this ride, man. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So, next story is playing coy, but by this point, looking at it recently, it's like, the cat's basically out of the bag on this one. So, EA's Motive Studio is reportedly working on the revival of an established IP that will be announced next month during EA Play Live, and reportedly will make fans happy. And basically, more and more has come out since then. So if you want to be surprised, here's your clue now. Stop. to try to duck out for a bit. But that established IP basically is almost confirmed to be Dead Space.
Woo!
Which hype. Yeah, good. I enjoyed Dead Space 1 and 2. I did not bother with Dead Space 3, but I enjoyed 1 and 2.
Man of culture.
Yeah, I didn't hear good things about 3. I played a little bit of 1, and I always wanted to play 2, but... You know, as Steve and I have talked about, he's not a fan of creepy games. I very much am a fan of creepy games, and Dead Space I thought was great.
Yeah, I adore Dead Space 1 and 2, and I think, you know, I'm Dead Space, you know, with fandom, I feel like you're either all in on 1 or all in on 2, as it went a little bit more action-y, you know, 1 being way more survival horror-y. I loved Dead Space 2. That was, like, the perfect combination for me of horror and agency. I was super excited to hear this. Of course, you know, who's working on it? Visceral, long gone, you know, one of the people who's doing it, Glenn Schofield's over at Striking Distance now, who's working on Calypso Protocol, which is a spiritual successor to Dead Space. So it's like, it's Dead Space in name only, but it's exciting to see EA take it on. And you hope they actually give resources and energy to making it, you know, correct and be live. It's going to have such an uphill battle of living up to what Dead Space was.
Oh, absolutely. Especially because it almost has to be. Like, do they go Dead Space 4 or do they reboot this thing? I don't know.
I think they reboot.
Yeah,
I could see that being the case.
We're so old. The people who play Dead Space right out there, like, I don't know, the kids these days, do they even know what Dead Space is?
I mean, it did come out pretty soon after Resident Evil 4. The funny thing is, I always hear from so many people, it's like, Dead Space is so scary. I'm like, really? Like, I never got scared by the game because I just have this thing, if they give me a good weapon, I'm pretty good to go. And that opening, what is it, plasma cutter? There was a specific trophy to beat the game with just the plasma cutter, and it is entirely possible to do with, honestly, it's almost easy mode because all of a sudden you all have to focus is on that thing, and it becomes so powerful.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Nice. Yeah. If it is a reboot, I would like to go back and try it again. I do tend to be okay with the survival horror games that, like Greg said, lean more into the action aspect of things. So I'm excited to see what this is, you know. But if it's, well, I'm a coward. If it's too spooky, I'm out. But
Steve, I want to see a stream of you playing Silent Hill 1, 2, and 3 with the lights off, headphones on. No, nothing to take away the horror element of those games, because
I don't know that I can document that for the internet to have forever. That would be I would like to do something for Halloween. I would probably, like, during spooky season, pick up a game I probably normally wouldn't play otherwise, like Eternal Darkness or something like that, and freak myself the hell out.
I'd recommend Alien Isolation. Good stuff.
Is Alien Isolation the one that had the really bad AI that was fixed with, like, a single typo?
No, that was Colonial Marines. That was Colonial Marines.
Yeah. Okay. Isolation was the good one from, I think it was Creative Assembly. And, God, that game's really good. Longer than you expect, too, but it actually had some legit moments for me.
And it seems like it's really scary based on what I've seen of it. It just seems really, especially if you're, you know, again, doing the whole experience. Like, when I play horror games, I really try to do at night, lights off, headphones on. That's how I played Fatal Frame Maiden of Blackwater, and I found it extremely effective. Nice. So, yeah.
Is that one worth it? I want to play it. I missed it on Wii U, but obviously now it's getting the, you know, multi-plat approach.
I would say yes. I really like that game. I reviewed it back on Game Explain. I really enjoyed it. I think it's scary as hell. It's a solid representation of Fatal Frame's gameplay. Story is interesting. You definitely do have to deal with tank-like controls, which is kind of endemic to that style of game, I guess. But in general, yeah, I fully recommend Maiden of Blackwater.
Cool.
I'm going to check it out and hope they're going to re-release the others. I have Fatal Frame 1 through 3 on PS2. I haven't had a chance to really play through them.
1 and 2 are great. I haven't played 3.
I played 1 for a stream, and I kind of got stuck because I ran out of camera thing, and my health was too low. I was just like, I couldn't. I was just like, well, I have to either get really good or something, and it just wasn't happening, so I had to stop.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, because I was really enjoying it up to that point, but oh well. Before we move on, Titus Malvolio with a $6.90 donation. Thank you so much. Nice. Very nice of you. been playing the 2D Metroids in chronological order before Dread. Beat Zero Mission yesterday without thinking. What's your favorite 2D Metroid game? Super. Oh, that's mean.
Super. Fusion's close, but it's super.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Again, the recurring theme of this episode being how ancient we all are. That one just arrived at a time in my life where it has this kind of lasting impact. You know, I remember sitting on the floor of my room playing that game, and it was one of the very first Super Nintendo games I ever played. So I was like, you know, like Greg, I grew up with a Genesis, and then some 3 years into that generation, my mom brought home a Super Nintendo, and I ended up going to the local Hollywood Video, again, I'm old, and rented Super Metroid. Just that was the first game that just kind of had this sense of atmosphere that I couldn't shake, that I just, it stuck with me. So yeah, I mean Fusion is a great game, and I think if I looked at it in a more critical way, in a non-emotional sense, I would probably go there, but Super Metroid just it's part of who I am at this point.
Oh yeah, no, I mean Fusion is a fantastic game, and I have all the love in the world for it. But Super just, yeah, it hits different for me. A funny story, actually, a little bit of an anecdote here. But when I was a kid playing Super Metroid the first time, I remember I was stuck for a long time in Meridia, right? And probably and that was before the internet, before, you know, you could just go up and look on GameFAQs or whatever. So I was stuck there for quite a bit, and the Nintendo hotline was too expensive to call, so I was stuck. And I remember while I was stuck in Meridia, I got hit by a really bad stomach bug that stayed with me for days. And there was one night where I'll never forget it. In that kind of weird space between being awake and being asleep, I was just kind of half dreaming of Super Metroid, of Meridia, and I dreamed up a way to move forward in the game, thinking I dreamed up something to try. And then when I was feeling well enough, I actually tried it. I don't remember what it was, but I found the way forward and was able to finally progress.
Oh my God, that's an awesome story.
I don't know.
Story.
It was really cool. I was just so entrenched in Super Metroid, and that game just infiltrated every part of my brain, and I couldn't get enough of it. When I wasn't playing it, I was thinking of it to the point where I dreamt of it, and I was actually able to dream my way forward in real life, which was really cool. I'll never forget it. Yeah.
What about you, Greg?
I've never connected with a Metroid.
Really?
Oh, okay. Again, being a Sega kid, my first exposure to Metroid, I should say, would have been Metroid Prime, watching my friend Kyle in college play it on the GameCube. And I totally vibed watching it and liking it, but I was never drawn to play it. And then when got to IGN and stuff and started trying to go back and play stuff, you know, now that I had everything at my fingertips, going back to Metroid and Super Metroid, both, you know, through the Switch Online and stuff like that, even, they've just, they're such a, Steve's talking about a place in time where it's I play something that's a Metroidvania nowadays, right? And can really enjoy it. I love Axiom Verge. I had a great time with that. And I can totally see all those influences in the other games, but going back to the source material is so antiquated for me that I just get mad at it. I'm like, oh, it's clunky or this or that. Or I don't like that it doesn't, you know, do the map right. It's all these things that make it not fun for me since I'm trying to play it decades after the fact.
Right.
Right.
Unfortunately, I have thought about this as we're going on, and I have to go with Fusion. I mean, it doesn't have the open elements. You're a lot more guided that time around, but the story is so intriguing. It has the first real sense of, I'd say, horror and fear that the series has tried to promote up to that point that I think succeeds at, and it's just really, really great time. So
yeah. Well, and Fusion uses its linearity to its advantage. It uses its linearity to really punctuate the storytelling in a way that works, unlike Other M, which didn't work at all. But no, Fusion uses its linearity to its advantage to make it an even better game. And oh man, I just love Fusion.
Mm. Oh man, I have a lot of fond memories of a lot of Metroid games. The funny thing is, though, I can't remember how I first played Super Metroid. I might have been on the Wii, because I didn't have an SNES growing up. I don't think I played it on GameCube or anything like that. So it must have been when I bought it on the Wii Virtual SNES, Console.
Got you.
No.
Yeah.
I did not. I played other things on the ZSNES when I was in college. That's how I played Mario RPG.
I want to take a moment to call out our awesome community, because there's a little discussion going on in our live audience chat right now where one of our longest supporters, Top Dog, said, "I played Metroid and Super Metroid for the first time a few days ago, and they both suck." Okay, obviously that's a hot take. Obviously a hot take, but you know what? Our awesome community is saying, you know what? That's how you feel, that's totally fine. You don't have to apologize. And you don't, Top Dog. If that's how you feel, that's totally, totally legitimate. And I just love that nobody's dragging you. That's just not what we're about here. And yeah, that's how you feel, man. That's how you feel. And I would actually agree with you about the original Metroid. It was incredible and groundbreaking at the time, but I don't think it's aged well at all. And Zero Mission's a very good remake of it, but it hasn't aged well. So I just want to say I love our community. Thank you all for being here with us and representing exactly what Good Vibes Gaming is all about. So just wanted to say that.
And real quick, before we move on to our final topic, a Black Ninja with another $2 donation saying, anyone pre-ordered the special edition yet? Nope.
Not yet.
Good luck doing that.
Still trying.
I got four kids, man. I don't have time to sit on Twitter waiting for merch to drop. It ain't happening.
Yeah.
I want it. I know my limits.
Huh.
Right.
Well, this is interesting. Let's go ahead and move on to our last topic, which is mysteriously vanished.
It is Psychonauts.
No, I know it's there. The vanishing part is the other thing.
Oh, the Twitter.
So Double Fine's senior producer Kevin Johnson says that no crunch was involved in Psychonauts 2 development, but I click on our link to look at his tweet.
Yes. And I was going to mention that when I was getting the slides ready for the show, I pulled up the VGC article that had the text from it. I'll read that out real quick. So the tweet, the now deleted tweet, read, fun fact, Psychonauts 2 has had no crunch. The team has been amazing, and I'm proud to have been part of something so special that's been made in the schedule we set forth. I think you'll have fun, too. And that came from Double Fine's Kevin Johnson, who originally tweeted that and has since removed it, which, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's a bit awkward.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't crunch? Get in there. So you gotta fit. Yeah. Get in there right now and do it.
I definitely quote tweeted that, which is super awkward. I don't know how to read that other than something about it was not true. Or
somebody disagreed, or he found out, or he's like, maybe other people that he didn't know about came out and like, hey, there was crunch for me or something. I don't know.
To be fair, it could be something far less insidious than that. A lot, and I mean a lot of folks in games and other adjacent industries have to run lots of things they say through PR before they say anything at all.
Remember, they're a Microsoft studio now. They're an Xbox studio. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not as easy as it used to be as an indie just to shoot off and say whatever you wanted to say.
Yeah, right. I've had a couple guests from some pretty reputable companies like Nvidia and a few others that have had to drop out of the show because I could not give them like a list of topics in advance of the show. And I'm like, well, it's a news show. We talk about whatever's happening that day. And they're like, well, that just doesn't work. We need to know exactly what's going to be asked. Well, okay. I guess that's not a fit.
Yeah. No, that's totally fair. And I'm glad you brought that up, Steve, because it could not be something as insidious as that. That's definitely true. It's just odd given the content of the tweet, given, you know, that it's generally good vibes and a positive thing. But yeah, it could just be, hey, someone says something out of turn, no matter what the context was or the content of the tweet was, and that's just not okay.
Right. Possible. I mean, Ratchet and Clank's, you know, Insomniac was able to tweet out about this, which sort of steamrolled the whole, like, hey, we're finally making these really good games with no crunch. Ain't that great? So.
Well, I mean, no crunch is objectively a good thing, but corporations are weird. And they want to control all the messaging around their products, and it could just be something as simple as, like, we just don't want to talk about crunch, period.
Exactly.
You know, I would wager that it's something more like that, because if it was a PR person reading it, I doubt they'd take offense with the actual content of the message and more just, hey, we have a policy that we don't publicly address crunch and issues like that, you know, take it down.
Yeah.
which I would think is probably closer to the truth.
According to Mikey O'Leary in the YouTube chat, the Twitter account is also locked down now. So,
I mean, that to me just. Yeah, it smells like somebody saw it and just said, hey, you know, you shouldn't be talking about stuff like this, period.
Now, I honestly, the fact that the entire Twitter, let me throw it up here, let's see what's going on with Kevin over here, Kevin Jones 25. The fact that the entire thing's locked and protected, honestly, I go the opposite way with it, where I don't think it was Microsoft. I bet it was just jerks on the internet. Like, I think, you know, we're all very publicly facing. We interact in a very specific way. We sadly are used to saying, hey, man, I really like game A. And everybody's like, you're an idiot. I hate game A. Game B's better. So you're somebody who, with all due respect to Kevin Johnson, I'm not sure how much he gets in front of people that way. You say something that you're like, hey, this is an objectively great thing. And somebody inevitably comes in of just like, wow. Crunch isn't that bad. This person said they didn't hate Crunch. And like, you know what? I'm going to go back to just being a normal human being and not looking at this all day long.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point, because there was, when this tweet was still up, I was kind of digging through the replies just to see how quickly they became toxic. Answer is pretty quick.
Right.
There was one person.
Twitter.com.
There
was one person. Disappointed.
Yeah, right. Weird. But yeah, there was one person saying, well, you know, Psychonauts 2 really has taken a long time to come out, so maybe there should have been.
Maybe Crunch isn't a bad thing. Yeah,
exactly. So, yeah. So
how dare you make this person wait?
Yeah.
I love that mentality. Like, I love the selfishness of that type of mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I know,
right? I want a video game now because there's not enough of them available.
Right.
Oh, no, we don't all have massive backlogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and as Cream Basics. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I want to buy this now so I can leave it on the shelf for 6 months and play it when it probably would have come out had you not worked yourself to death.
Yeah.
Right. As Cream Basics in our live audience patron chat also points out, Psychonauts 2, hey, it isn't out yet. It hasn't come out yet. So, you know, there's also the fact that, hey, development maybe isn't actually 100% complete. It could be any number of things that caused this tweet to get nuked. But, yeah, well, hopefully it is true, and hopefully there wasn't crunch, because, as we said, no crunch is objectively a good thing. And look at freaking Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart. What an incredible game. I've been working my way through it. It is such a fantastic game. And I love that it is the result of a production process with no crunch. It's amazing.
A little bit of side news on that. I did see a report that said that it actually sold better in its second week in the UK. So
nice.
I think it's finally getting that word of mouth and Ratchet really taking off. Which
an incredible God. Game. And finally, I'm someone who didn't really care about the franchise before Rift Apart. So I'm glad to see it is successful and that it was built and, you know, developed in a healthy way.
100%. Yeah.
Cool. All right. With that, I believe we've covered all the major headlines from today's news. But before we sign off, Greg, I mean, there might be somebody out there who doesn't know where to find you yet. So why don't you tell them where we can find you?
My name is Greg Miller, and I work on a YouTube channel called youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. We do a number of programs, but if you like news shows like this one, maybe check out Kind of Funny Games Daily, where we run through the biggest video game news stories each and every day. You can find it on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and podcast services around the globe each and every weekday.
Awesome
well, stuff.
Greg, thank you so much for being here, man. It's been a true pleasure having you on the show, and we'd love to have you back anytime. Thank you so
much. Thank you so much for having me. Well, you guys got to cross over more often. You got to come do Games Daily and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm in. Exactly. I'm in anytime, man.
I thought about that.
I've been on it once. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I've also been on Gamescast and Games Daily one time, and I thought about it when this pandemic started, and I was like, you know what? It's easier than ever to do that show.
Totally. Every show is this now, just talking into this.
There you go.
No, I had a blast talking about, I think it was Jedi Fallen Order with you guys. We did Daily, and then we did, so that was a lot of fun.
You want to know what is almost heart-wrenching is, I've been on Kind of Funny Games Daily once, back when Jared was part of the crew, and that was a couple years ago at this point. And do you know what we talked about? We talked about the Switch Pro. Like, that was the crux of our episode.
It's gonna happen any day now, I bet.
Yeah, exactly. Although, it hasn't been waiting at me that long.
I do hold the honor of being on the show on the day that PSN name changes got announced. So
that's a huge one then. There you go. Yeah, you nailed that.
Part of Kind of Funny history.
Part of video game history.
There we go.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Well, oh my goodness. Well, before we sign off and thank the patrons, got a couple more super chats in here. Oh my God. Mwabwe Mulenga with a $5 donation saying, Greg, I gotta know, since you have the Superman logo behind you, thoughts on Superman and Lois.
Oh man, I really dig it. Yeah, since they did that mid-season break, they did weird, after like 4 or 5 episodes, I have the other one stacked up. I haven't watched them yet, because I don't know how about you guys, but I'm very much a video game guy. So when it comes, I watch things with my wife, and she's pregnant, so she goes to bed about 9 o'clock. And she does not like Superman and Lois, so I'll watch that by myself thing, but whenever I'm by myself, I just want to play games. So I let them stack up until I have to do some kind of chore or whatever, and then I do it. But the ones that I watched for that first half of the season, really dug. I really like Bitsy and Tyler being Lois and Clark. I think it's a really cool, you know, somebody who burned out in the CW shows. Like, I was huge on Smallville, and then did the Arrowverse for quite a while, but eventually it was just like, I can't keep up with this, and they keep repeating stuff. The fact that it is so different, the fact that it is just like, what the Kents move back to Smallville, Superman's doing his thing, let's make it more about a family drama rather than the will they, won't they, you know, drama they're used to for romance. I dig it a lot.
Nice.
Right. But awesome. And Mwape, thank you for bringing that up, and I apologize in advance for this, Greg, but I was actually going to mention that, and this tells you everything about my mindset. When I first saw that Superman logo behind you, the colors are washed out enough on my end that I was like, oh, is that a Chaos Emerald? And then I realized, of course, it's Superman. I realized it later.
When I did something recently with my lens, it got way more washed out. I need to get diffuser paper for it, but there's a million things I need to do.
Nice. Yeah, I recently I watched that whole drama of that Superman light unfold on your Twitter where you were asking folks to put it back together. Yeah.
Oh boy.
That's funny.
Well, one last thing, and just massively, massively generous.
Oh my god.
Rob Arman X with $100 donation says, here's to 100 more. Maybe Persona News will happen by then and I can join. You know, I think that fits. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I know so that I would much. I would gladly donate my seat to you, sir, because Persona News and I, we don't get along. I'm excited for those folks, but I need to finish a Persona game at some point in my life.
Yeah,
No, seriously, Rob, thank you so much. Yeah, thank you. Incredible kindness. Thank God. And I think this is a great, great way to end off on episode 100. You, Narukami, with a nuclear hot take in our live audience patron chat. No. And they even spoiled it. They even spoiled it to show just how nuclear it is. But they say, and I say this to every one of you listening, you all are amazingly beautiful and have lots of potential for greatness. And I would love to meet you all in real life one day. Fuck all the haters of each one of you. Well said, you, Narukami. Wow. Thank you. That's a great, awesome, positive message to end off on. And thank you so much to all of you who have been here with us for 100 episodes of this show. And thank you to my incredible co-hosts, Steve and Derek. Thank you guys for being on this awesome journey with me. And here's to 100 more. Let's do it.
Heck yeah.
Hell yeah.
Congrats, guys. We live long enough to see it.
Seriously.
That's dark.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
There we go. So before we die, before we sign off, we also, of course, got to give a special thanks to all of our patrons, big and small, just all of you. Thank you so much for supporting us each and every day, being there for us. And of course, a extra special thank you to our patrons at the producer tier, as this show just would not be possible without all of you. But of course, a massive, massive thank you to our executive producers, and above, and I'm delaying because I forgot to bring up the thing.
I know that stall well. I know that stall well. Let me tell you about sponsors because they make it. You're click, 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 click.
I am on the ball tonight. I got blown away by Rob's generous donation. But yes, thank you all so much to our executive producers, who include Jared Edinger, Brandon Bovia, Rob Arman X, Itiono Ben, Dan Inchwistle, Dennis J, Z Patty, Hyrule Hermit, Sky Blue Flames, Adam O'Sullivan, It's ATM, Octopuppet, Richard Herrera, Michael Phone, Echo Carroll, The D-Pad, Vesmio, Waffle King, Kitty Kong Facts, Angel Martinez, Vedran Hotik, 112, John, Joshua Hunter, Evernight Studio, Benny Yao, Emerald, Azran 127, Ken Roulet 09, Pagrima, Jake Pelka, Geller, Shiny Turkey, Joseph Rutkin, Titus Malvolio, Charlie Bird, Geeky Griffin, Lucky Wonderfish, Top Dog 23100, Young Ben Kenobi, Doug Shomix, Andrew Medeiros, Orem M, Sakuragi, Becca, Rox the Cat, Fizzy Wighoid, Critmonger, The Legend of Groose, Eddie B, Kai Ed, Kit Fisto, West Egg, Deaneth, Coda, Michael McCall, Matthew Wong, Goron Amber, Straight Lace, Hooby, Wolf X Blake, Moon Macarons, Ascaron 809, Kane, Captain Finlandia, 60 Minutes and 60 Seconds, Christopher Masterson, Spicy Pandaughter, The Game Orb, Dano the Artist, Ravelox, Synchro Lord, Brainchild, Rosa Bowling.
Hi, Mom.
Kotar Peck, Scuff 196, Skull Kid Tiger, AJB Cool, Blizzica, Jason Uloa, Jaden Buck, Phantom Project, Derek, Jeff Ed, Ray Clawson Jr., Nathan the Voice Actor, Mega Conrad, Hulkamaniac 55, Chibi J, and finally, Bongo Lover. Holy cow. I believe we are officially up to like 90 executive producers at this point.
Good Lord, guys.
So, yeah. Holy crap. Thank you so much. And remember that you can be too become a you too can become a patron over at patreon.com/GVGaming, where you can get access to our exclusive post show and ad-free content for as little as $5 a month. Thank you all so much for watching, especially to Ashley in the super with the super chat, wife of Steve.
Hi, sweetheart.
Who says, do a dance. And he'll end with a little dance for us. And thank you all so much for watching. If you like this video, be sure to subscribe to Good Vibes Gaming for more good times like these. Until next time, good night and good vibes.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.